Hello and welcome to What Else Do You Do? I'm your host, Masao. I'm an indie producer in Montreal working for Studio Cut to Bits. And today, our guest is Monica Fan. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Monica. I am a game designer, recently finished grad school. I used to live in Chicago and recently moved to Pittsburgh. Right now, I'm an associate game designer at Shell Game.
Congratulations on your graduation. That was, when did that happen? September?
6 months ago. It's in May. Okay. Yeah, so
it feels like it was recent, but I guess it's just COVID times. Everything's just kind of looping back to itself.
Yes, and also like the way we handle a lot less after I graduated. So yeah, and I'm glad to see you again.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the second of our interview series interviewing Asian game devs working in the West. Monica, what kind of Asian are you?
I was born in Shanghai, China. I was there until I was 18. After high school, I came to America for undergrad, and I've been stay here ever since. But legally, I'm still Chinese. I'm on like a temporary visa, and most of my family are still Chinese and still in China. So I would say I'm less Asian than I came to America 10 years ago, but I'm a lot more Asian than most Asian I know. In the way that I still miss the food. I still think, you know, Chinese food is way better than any other food.
Okay, so you kind of jumped the gun on this because I was going to ask you, like, how Asian do you feel? And I guess pretty Asian.
Yeah, I think I'm less... It's interesting because I feel a lot more Asian. A month ago, I moved to Pittsburgh from Chicago. I feel a lot more Asian in Pittsburgh than I have, than I used to feel when I lived in Chicago like 4 weeks ago. I think it has a lot to do with the people I'm around and how diverse the environment is. And also not being in school anymore means you no longer have like a Chinese Student Association. You don't have like a lot of those type of environment.
Okay, so like your sense of like lack of community makes you feel more Asian.
Oh, my observation of how white everyone around me makes me feel more Asian.
Okay,
it's interesting,
like
it's
kind of like a point of reference. Like,
yes, because in Chicago, everyone has a different culture. Everyone is different. You don't really feel like, I don't feel particularly Asian. I just feel like, okay, I'm different. But when you live in like a more homogenous city, everyone has roughly like in Pittsburgh, everyone loves Steelers. Everyone loves like this football team. They go to like, you know, Mimosa every Sunday morning. And then suddenly I feel like I'm a lot more Asian because like I was like, okay, I'm a lot different from most people around me.
Okay. What is the Asian like presence like in Pittsburgh? I mean, Pittsburgh is a fairly large city, right? And it's a very industrial city. So I'd imagine it's got a fair number of immigrants, no?
It's really interesting because in Pittsburgh, there are almost just two Asian community. One is there's a lot of university here. There's Carnegie Mellon. There's like University of Pittsburgh. So you have a lot of students. But then you have like, there isn't, seems to be a lot of Asian like living in the city that are not students.
Okay.
But it's really interesting here because...
So not a lot of permanent residents, right? Like basically you have a lot of like people who are there for a few years.
I don't live in where the students are. So like in my neighborhood, I don't see a lot of Asian. But like if you live in like Squirrel Hill or like there's certain neighborhood where like all the students live, it's a lot more diverse.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but also like on the other hand, one thing I love about Pittsburgh is I never see so many white people in all the Asian restaurants. And it just makes me so happy.
What do you mean? Like...
Like even in Chicago, like a lot of time, you know, you go to Chinatown and you see like, you know, there's 10 tables, there's 8 Asian and there's 2 like other race, because like it's mostly like Asian people who come to eat like authentic Asian food. Versus mm-hmm. here, you will see like I don't know, when I live in Midwest, a lot of people and a lot of white people I met, they are really scared of trying like other food. They're scared of trying like food that doesn't look familiar. Versus here, it's like you see, you know, there are like just people here, they will just order like, you know, the weirdest, they'll order like a whole crab, or they'll order like a fish with bone in it. And like, you know, those things that, and then you're just like, that okay, scared, you're trying.
That can scare white people, yes. Yeah. Yes. I thought you were going to say like, yeah, no, they're ordering like tripe and stinky tofu. not quite there.
Yeah, but like just, yeah, seeing, you know, I'm so used to seeing white people ordering General Tso's chicken, orange chicken, and sesame chicken. So like seeing them order like the stuff I eat growing up is very, it warms my heart.
I understand where you're coming from. So before I live in Montreal now, and I've been here for 15 years. But before that, I was in San Francisco. And in San Francisco, I think I felt less Asian. Because like San Francisco is so Asian as well, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know recent statistics, but when I was living there, the demographics was roughly 30% Asian. So like, I just didn't think about it. Like, it wasn't really a thing. And people saw me and recognized me as someone who was mixed race Asian, because they've seen them before. Like, they, you know, it was something that was like very normal to them and recognizable. Whereas I came here and it's really not the case. Like, a lot of people I talk to don't have Asian acquaintances or, you know, Asian friends. And yeah, it's, there are Asians in Montreal, like compared to other cities in Quebec, it's definitely one of the more diverse. But Montreal is also very segregated. So like the Asians kind of are in specific neighborhoods and not in others. And I've always chosen to kind of live in more of the whiter neighborhoods because of, mostly because like where the studio is located. Because I worked for Ubisoft for a long time, and that's kind of in like the Mile End, which is kind of like the hipster neighborhood. Yeah. And hipsters are generally white. And
Yeah, like when I moved here, I had option of choosing to live in an Asian neighborhood or choose to live somewhere I can walk to work. And I end up choosing somewhere I can walk to work because, you know, I was like, I need to go to work every day. And I don't, like, I can't always, you know, take bus to like the Asian neighborhood to get stuff I need. It's interesting because when I was in Wisconsin, when I first came to America, I lived in Wisconsin, and I had a lot of very, I used to work at PBS, and where like we have a lot of like really nice granny would like insist to introduce me to the other Asian person they know. And sometimes like they would be like, oh, I know like Alice, she's from China. Do you know her? Like a billion people in China. I don't think so.
Yeah, that is pretty funny.
But it's also like in Chicago, there's a very distinct experience for me. Is I feel my Asianness goes a lot shoot up after COVID, after the anti-Asian racism. Because suddenly I've noticed people start to like, you know, in a train station and stuff, people started looking at me different. And I have to re-examine my Asianness during the coronavirus, like the pandemic, because first of all, because I have a lot of friends who live in like Chinatown and who's like has business in Chinatown, and you can see like the whole like the Chinatown just suddenly become a ghost town. And then also just my personal experience in public, you start to realize people started just looking at you, like staring at you, like be very careful like where you're going after like you know the pandemic. And I even being on like trains where people would just like stand up and like go to a different train card. Good for me because I get to sit, but also it's like, okay, so I'm different and I am unfortunately, me being Chinese, it's like sometimes it's easier because I'm Chinese or maybe because I'm Asian. But either ways, you can feel like suddenly I'm much more aware about my identity because of the pandemic and because the American previous president doesn't really like.
Yeah. You were talking about food. Like, how's this food situation in Pittsburgh? Like, are you able to get the Asian ingredients? Do you cook?
I'm not good at cooking, unfortunately. And I've been relying on, unfortunately, like, so when I was in Chicago, there's a grocery store called H Mart, which means H Mart is amazing because they have a lot of like half cooked food. You can just like heat it up, or like you can just like, they have like pre-marinated like bulgogi, which is the Korean barbecue stuff, and you can just cook it like on the stove. Here it's interesting because there are a lot of restaurants and there aren't that many grocery shops. I think because there isn't that much of an Asian population, and also students usually don't cook that much. So there are a lot of good restaurants. There are a few grocery shops, but like the stuff are very scarce, like not very fresh. Okay. And but like I'm able to get, like, you know, to me it's like if I have rice, I would be happy. Although the difference is like if you go to like San Francisco, you can get a larger variety of Asian foods versus Pittsburgh, you have, you know, your staple Sichuan food, which are very spicy. And you have the Taiwanese food that comes with bubble tea and fried chicken. And maybe there's a Cantonese food. I haven't found it. And that's pretty much it. You don't really get a lot of variety here. But I'd be happy that at least the variety I get, they are mostly very authentic, which is really surprising. And I think also just, you know, like coming here for like over a decade, I've learned to adjust my expectation about food. Like, I know, okay, like, you know, this is the food I'll be like. And also because like it's mostly restaurant, I can't really afford to go out all the time. So to me, like an authentic Asian food is a way for me to reward myself by the end of the week.
Okay. So you said that you've been living in the United States for 10 years. So that's a long time.
Yes.
Especially since, I don't know how old you are, but like you came to the States pretty young.
Yeah, I came here right after I turned 18.
Okay.
And I spent 6 years in college, mostly because if we want to go back to like how I become a game dev, but like when I first came here, I didn't really speak English. So I spent like my first year in college just to learn how to speak English and how to read
English
and write.
The second language. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a lot. And then I switched many different majors and stuff because in China, you never get to choose your major. So I guess I went a little bit too wild. I have like so many different majors. I have a different major every semester.
But eventually you graduated.
Yes. Yes. Eventually I realized I need to graduate. But it is interesting because I came here like, you know, I think a lot of Chinese kids come here. Your parents was like, okay, there's only a couple of major you can choose. You can either do business, you can do biology and become a doctor, or you can do one of the science stuff, then become an engineer. So I tried a few of them. Because I was a kid, I really want to make my parents like happy, but it didn't really work out, unfortunately. Unfortunately, I feel I would be a lot less happier if I really end up becoming an engineer or something.
Well, let's talk about video games. Like, so how did you end up in video games? So you get to the United States, you're studying, you're studying English, you're studying either biology or engineering or one of those approved majors?
I was actually, at the time, I was studying criminal justice, trying to criminal be justice. Law.
Okay, so.
And I had the worst Tinder date ever. Okay, like for example, when you first came to America, you have a lot of questions and you want to like talk to people. But if your English is bad, a lot of people don't want to talk to you. So there's like couple ways to find ways to practice your English. One is a very common way is especially in like Midwest, when you go to school, you'll have a lot of people from Bible study. They will try to like encourage you to come to Bible study and to like learn to go to churches.
They'll patiently talk to you about the Bible.
Yes. They will like spend as long as you want talking about Bible and teach you how to speak English. That scares me a little. I get a little bit nervous when people like you don't know very well just become very overbearing and very nice, because like I'm from like a city that you're always being told like stranger danger. But that's one way. A lot of people like join churches to practice English, and that's like actually a really common way. But when I was in like freshman year, my friend was like, have you heard this thing called Tinder? And you can just go online and people will just talk to you and they'll practice English with you. And that's what I did.
You were aware that it was a dating website, right? Like it wasn't like...
Okay, it took a while.
Okay, so you initially did not realize that's what was going on.
Did not realize because my English wasn't good enough to realize. Like people will send you, and it was like early day Tinder, so like people were still like they send you metaphor and it's all just like nothing because my English was not that good. I only understand basic stuff.
Everything was
happily talking to everyone because I was like, okay, like, you know, I get to chat, I get to practice my English, I get to use the new vocabulary, and they never like, you know, they all just nicely talk to me. And in my junior year before I turned senior, after I realized what Tinder is for, I went on a Tinder date with a guy who told me he invited me on a boat, on a sailing boat to go sail. Unfortunately, he did not tell me he hasn't touched sailing boat for a few years and he lost control of the sailing boat. And as a result, I was... basically, I got into a very bad boating accident because the boom of the sailing boat hit my head. I went into a really, really bad concussion. And I spent a year resting in bed. And I have never played video game until then, because when I was little, my mom, like, even now my mom is like, video games are evil. If you touch it, your life will be ruined. But at the time...
Well, I guess she was right.
Yes, she was. But at the time, I was like, I wasn't, the doctor was like, we are not sure if you are going to recover. And I was like, I was so dizzy and like the dizziness was so bad. I couldn't read book. I couldn't watch movie. And I have like severe balance issue. So as a result, I remember I had an ex at the time who was playing like video games. So I went to the GameStop right next to where I live. I just be like, so I want to try this video game things out. What should I get? And they look very shocked, but they did explain like different consoles and stuff. And that's how I got into like video game. And for like, I remember I had a 3DS at the time, and that was like my most major companion during like, you know, that I spent a year actually resting in bed, and I spent a lot of time playing video game, and I spent a lot of time, video game is like a thing that helps me, like, you know, I can stay awake longer and longer, help me like just like have little achievement because I couldn't go to school. I couldn't do anything. And also I didn't tell my parents about this. So like I was very much alone and like I was just...
So your parents didn't know that you were like recovering from this major concussion?
No.
Jesus.
Because I don't know how to explain about how I got into this sketchy Tinder date and end up getting
I mean, you didn't, I guess, I mean, you don't have to explain why you were on the boat. You would just be like, yeah, this nice person took me on a boat and I got a major concussion.
Yeah, it was.
Jesus, that's awful though. That's a terrible story. But I guess, I mean, it's the silver lining is that you discover video games. And
I discover video game, and then I don't know, out of nowhere, I have this idea of I want to be a game designer. I don't know what game design is. Actually, it's interesting now I work at Shell Game because Jesse Shell's book, The Book of Lenses, was the first book I read to understand what actually a game designer is. Because I have no idea what you do as a game designer. I just have this idea, if there's video game, that means someone is designing it. I want to do that. And I went to I was like being as nerdy as I was. I actually went to university course log, and find there is like a 900 level PhD class about game development. And I emailed the professor and got into that class. And that was how I started to understand what video game is. And like my understanding of video games started with reading a book every week about the history of video game. And history like Homo Ludens, like all those like classic game design book. And that was before I actually started to actively play video game, which like a lot of stuff, it took a couple of years later for me to understand the stuff I was reading. But it's actually one thing it does is actually I met Gordon Bellamy, who is currently a professor at USC. He went to teach. He went to give a speech at our class. And he was like, oh, everyone should like add me on social. So I add him on social. And one day he posted a link about a GDC lottery. And I put like my application to GDC lottery and like without knowing what GDC is or anything. And I got in and I went to GDC and started meeting a lot of like cool people. I remember my first GDC. I was like, oh my God, everyone is so cool. And like, I just wish like, you know, I was just so happy I get to talk to people about like video game and stuff. And like, I get to just hearing like, you know, all these talented people talking about how the magic are made. And it's just amazing. And, that's how, and then I started like go to like apply for grad school to study game design. And then now I'm here, but it was an interesting a few years. Like this thing happens when I was 21. I'm 28 now, so it's like 7 years ago. But also a lot of things happened because I was in a game design program. Then the former Wisconsin governor canceled our program. And I had to like switch to getting an art degree so I can have a portfolio to go to a game design grad school. And luckily, it happens to work out. I was very lucky. I feel like I'm extremely lucky to have like good opportunities to like do it, but also just everything is very magical.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite a journey. So you mentioned that your mother thinks video games are evil. Like how do your parents feel about the fact that you are now a game developer?
They do not understand it. The whole time they're just like, what's wrong? Like what happened? Like why? And I can't even explain to, I guess they're glad that I'm able to get a job that get paid. Like, you know, they were very, very, very doubting whether I have the ability to like, you know, get a job ever. So they're glad I have a job, but they do not understand what I'm doing. And like, if you know anything about how China, the state of video gaming in China, it's understandable why they have the attitude, but also they just don't understand what I'm doing. They're not trying to understand. And yeah.
Well, do you want to talk a little bit about the state of video games in China?
So video game is very stigmatized in China, even now. What there's on one hand is like, a lot of video games does not like the part people knows is video games. A lot of video games, it does not really get approved in China. So in China, you have to get the government approved to release a video game. And a lot of people know that a lot of game, like right now, they have a freeze where they don't approve anyone's video game. That's one side. The other side is a lot of people don't know is there is, so it goes to back about being Asian, or Asian value is a lot. It's like the idea of fun is not, is very like, you know, it's only lazy people have fun. The idea of fun is not a very comfortable, people are not comfortable with having fun.
And like you're not being productive. Like you should be productive at all times.
Exactly. So the idea is like, if you're having fun, you're wasting time doing more important things. So video game as a fun machine means it's extremely guilty, because it's just like, oh, why are you like, you know, playing video game on instead of doing other stuff? And also this exceptionally apply to kids. Is the idea is like, oh, when you're kids, you are learning very fast, so you shouldn't waste your time to have fun.
And yeah, you should be studying.
Yes, especially like in China, at least like kids spending like at least 10 hours to 12 hours a day in school, and they go home and do my homework. So like the idea is like parents are scared of introducing the idea of fun to their kids, because they're worried like the kids is gonna find their things they prefer to do than doing homework. And then there are also a lot of rumors, a lot of like, it's like, imagine like, you know, I think in the 80s in America, it's still the case. It's like, oh, if the kids play video game, they're gonna get violent, they're gonna become bad, they're gonna learn all the bad things. Mm-hmm. So the idea is do not introduce like this ideology, this idea of video game to kids, especially if you're a girl. It's not the case if you're a boy for some reason. I never understand this part, but for some reason, if you are a girl, you should especially not be kept away from video game. So like my parents these days, they just keep asking me, you're a girl, why are you making game? It's like my parents are more gatekeeping about video game than anyone in the industry. They generally do not believe like as a girl I should do this. Wow. For whatever reason. It's crazy. But it is. It's like there are like in China, there is like when I grew up, there are this video game camp where they send kids who parents believe are addicted to video game into this camp where they get physically punished they just basically get punished to get the video game out of them.
Oh, wow. It's like Jesus camp, but like,
yes, it's like Jesus camp, but for like anti-video game.
Wow.
And you just keep hearing stories about like someone who like, I have a cousin. I don't know if it's true or not, but like I have a cousin where I was told that he used to be like very nice and like have really good grades and everything. And then he touched the video game. Then he refused to do anything else and spent all his time in video game.
It's like Reefer Madness, but video games.
Yes, exactly. So like, because of that, I was shielded away from video game. When I was little, I play like flash game. Because like there's no way my parents would get me any video game, but there was like website about flash game. And one day my mom come back home and she just like had a mental breakdown and told me how disappointed I am. She is about me touch video game, about me decide to give up my life. And so yeah, it's okay. Weird. It's like, I mean, not all parents are as crazy as my parents, but like there is a very strong anti-video game sentiment among a lot of adults. Doesn't mean people don't play, they just don't believe, like, you know, they just, well, yeah, don't,
obviously they play. Like China has a huge market for video games.
Like my mom, she play video game, but she her reason is because she's retired. or like she's adult, but like, you know, when you grow up, you are like being told video game is this like drug, do not touch, and if you touch, your life will ruin. And I think that's the reason I'm a game designer. Like, I think it's just...
You touched a video game and it's completely ruined your life. That's why you're a game designer? Or you mean like... Or you mean that like it was so forbidden that you wanted it more?
No, neither actually. The reason I become a game designer is actually I was such a good kid. I decide the only way I can play video game is if I made a career out of it.
So you have to be productive.
I have to be productive. I am so productive that I decide to like, I either don't play or I'm just going to dedicate my whole life to it. Okay. So
it has to be a productive output though. Like you can't just play video games.
Yeah. So now I can play any game I want as long as I'm telling myself I'm actually learning something, which, you know, it's a different story. But I think it's just the way I was raised. I was raised in such a way that it makes me be like, I like this. I have to, you know, like I need to find a way to play. I don't want to stop playing it. But also when you are raised in such a way, it's very hard to break free.
Yeah.
And so I just made a career out of it.
Well, let's talk about your career. Like, so what is it like to work in the games industry as an Asian person? Like, what are some things that have happened that you think happened specifically because you were Asian?
Well, I can't speak about everything. I think I can speak about being a game designer as Asian, because from my understanding, it's very different versus if you are a programmer. Being Asian, you'll see a lot more representation because there's a lot more Asian programmer. But as a game designer, it's being Chinese, being not from here, and it's a game design is a highly collaborative job. Like early, like a couple years ago, I had a lot of trouble finding people to give me an opportunity because they just don't see me as a team player. They don't see me as like someone who can speak their language. And it was before diversity inclusion was like a big topic in the game industry. And it was still like very much, you know, people are trying to hire, especially designer creators who can satisfy their fantasy. And they don't see me as a person like that. They see the way I look. They see my background. They don't think, you know, it's hard to get a foot in the door because a lot of people just don't think I can get along or like I don't understand.
You don't fit the culture or.
Yes. Or like
the ideas like. And say like, well, you're not going to make video games that are going to be played by 18 to 35 year old men.
Yes, very much. And this goes forward like to like even these days, a lot of time when you work with male designers who just really try to educate you what is fun and what is fun for them as an 18 to 35 years old white man. And to me, it's like I have like for me, it's like my role as a game designer is to understand people from different perspectives, is to advocate the fun for people with different background. I don't just design game for other Asians. Like I believe a good white man game designer shouldn't just design game for other white men. I feel like a lot of time I feel I have to prove that I understand what it's like to be fun. I don't know how much has to do with the stereotype of like Asians are just not very fun. And you know, a lot of time it's like I have to prove to people, be like, okay, I do know what to do. And like the reason I'm able to get a job right now is because I always know I want to be a game designer. But in order to get a job as a game designer, I have to learn how to do everything. And I end up making game on my own. And then I can bring this game to people, be like, see, I do know what fun means. You meet a lot of, you know, like white male game designers. All they do is game design. They don't know how to program. And like, I'm like, I can do everything on the game production because I have to. I have to give myself opportunities so I can. And also, like, there are different way of handing out when you have to do like, my preferred way of hanging out is probably not, you know, going out late at night, going to a bar and drink with other men and other people. But like, I have to learn how to like, you know, go to club. I have to learn how to drink. I have to learn how to like, just, I have to actively try very hard to show like, I understand what fun is. And, you know, we talk to a lot of other like game designer from different perspective, different background, and you were like, okay, we have very different, you know, idea, or like we have very different like path to the industry. And I think if you are like Asian and you try to prove you are creative, you have to sometimes like, and also being a game designer is weird. It's, you don't have a portfolio. Like, you can't really have a portfolio. Yeah. Like, you know, if I'm an artist, I have a portfolio. If I'm a programmer, I have a portfolio. As a game designer, until you actually work on a team has, or like, unless you make your game on your own, you can't really prove your game design skill. You have to like either through design tests, or like you have to just, people has to give you opportunities. And also game design is like, for example, when I first moved to Chicago 3 years ago, I have a lot of people question whether they just telling me, I was like, how do I be a game designer? And they tell me you need to have the design brain. And it's a design brain. I personally think it's a myth. It's a huge myth. It's like some people are just born with this brain. Because what I learned is there are things you learn on the job.
Actually say that?
Yes. I have more than one designer telling me, you got to show you have a design brain. And
I mean, they do realize it's a methodology that you learn, right? Like they
exactly. That's, yeah, it's not. It's game design. Like, it's
not like they came up with them. Like, if that was the case, like, why would anybody ever go to school for game design? Like,
exactly.
That's well, absurd.
This is from a lot of like older designers who did like before there was school and stuff. But like, I hate to say this, but like a lot of time when they're looking for design brain, what they're really looking for is someone who has the same culture background from them, who speak the same language and have the same hobby. They're not really looking for quote unquote design brain. Being a good designer takes more than have a brain. Well, it need a brain. That's not what I mean. Like it's about like whether you like, you know, whether you're good at communication, and there's like the methodology you learn, and like when you spend more time in the studio, you learn like how production works. You start to learn all the lessons from experience and stuff. The problem is you don't gain experience if nobody gave you opportunities.
For sure.
And this goes back to even in school, because it's really hard to like in school. I went to game school, like I'm from like the traditional academic, but like in school, you usually have like team project and group project. And as a Asian woman, it's really hard to persuade your teammate to try up your idea, because, you know, usually there's like four white guy and there's me, and there isn't like a particular role or hierarchy or anything. And everything was getting voted on like what we do, what decision we make. And I almost always lose the vote. So after I finished school, I don't really have a lot of project where I'm proud on, or like a project that can showcase my ability as a designer, because usually it's the guys in the group made all the decision. And then you get out of school, then you are like, okay, I need experience. I need opportunities. Which is very hard, because people be like, oh, you don't have like those things in the school, or like you don't look like you have design brain, or you don't, you know, there's many different reasons people told me that they don't want to give me a try. Because I understand, well, I guess from a capitalism perspective, you want to give opportunity to who do you think has the most success rate, and often they look like the people in the company. Especially in like a very saturated market like Chicago. Chicago is extremely competitive, very saturated, because every kids in Midwest who want to become a game dev come to Chicago. It's very, very hard to get a creative job in Chicago.
So, because the number of positions don't line up with the number of applicants, basically.
Because the number of positions, and because the way they usually don't really hire publicly. They usually hire through, who do you know? Who's your friend? Do you have any friends who need a job here? Ask them in. And like, because I mean, this is a very wide issue in the gaming industry, is a lot of jobs are down, a lot of hiring are through who do you know. White men are more likely to have other white men friends, and they're more likely to recommend other white men friends. And
for sure.
Which is why we have such a diversity issue in the game industry. And
totally understand. So I'm on the hiring side, and I have been on the hiring side for many years. And the problem is that, like, okay, so it's very scary to hire somebody because you get somebody and they don't know how to do the job. And then now you have this person that now you have to deal with.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, financially, emotionally, and physically terrifying. And I think, at least in my experience, video game schools are not terribly good at, like, creating candidates that are professionally able to do the job of a game developer.
Oh, no, because...
In my experience, I've noticed that, like, game development programs are generally a little too, like, general. So you get these people who have been studying game design or game development for, let's say, anywhere between, like, 2 to 4 years. But in the 2 to 4 years, it's not like they chose something and they practiced that. It's like, oh, well, they did a little bit of this and they did a little bit of that. So at the end of it, they kind of have a loose understanding of, like, different parts of it, but, like, they're not professionally competent in any particular field. So you end up with a situation where you have all these people who are, like, graduating students, and then there's these people, like, on my side, and, like, I need to hire people. And I look at their, like, portfolio and I talk to them and, like, well, I can't hire you as, like, you know, as a character modeler, or I can't hire you as a game designer even, because, like, you lack, like, basic understanding of what I would need for you to even be a junior. So I think that's why a lot of times it kind of ends up being this, like, kind of referral cycle. Lately, I'm trying to be kind of pushing my boundaries a little bit more so I don't end up with just white dudes' resumes. But yeah, so what I would do is, like, I would talk to people who are teaching in programs and ask them, like, okay, so who are your best students? Like, who are the ones that show the most potential?
Yeah, it's there's a reason for that. The reason the school are not good at, like, I'm someone who just recently graduated. There's usually the issue with, there's a couple issues. One is the people who are teaching, a lot of them don't really have professional. Like, my teacher, like, in my school, now my teacher have, like, a lot of professional studio experience. And they are just because there's, like, you know, when you go to, like, a good school, they're like, okay, you need to have a PhD degree. You need to have this and that. And I know, like, they have passed on someone with development experience in favor of someone with a PhD degree. So in the end, you have a lot of people who study, like, a lot of game design theory, but doesn't have a lot of practice and doesn't really. So, like, in the class, we were talking a lot about, like, oh, why doesn't, like, this game does this? Why doesn't that game does that? Why won't QA just, like, catch all the bugs? Well, that's because game development is a complicated process which involves a lot of chaos. But when you don't have, like, professors have, like, you need to have... So in order to cultivate a junior, you need someone with a senior ability and experience. Or, like, you know, a good environment, which, like, university don't really are not. But on the other hand, it's like, if you are a very experienced, very good senior, why would you want to be a game professor?
I do know some seniors that teach that, yeah. That care about the community and want to give back to the community. But yeah,
those are very good people.
Yeah, but they're very nice people.
Yes. So there's this issue. And also when I was, like, in game school, I have this experience is people, professors from, like, other department really look down on you for being a game professor because they think this is not real academic or real science. But that's a different story. But basically, it's like you have a lot of, you know, you need very good faculties, and good faculties with studio experience are hard to find, who also have, like, you know, enough degree to, you know, to get approved by, like, whatever bureaucracy you need from a given institute. Then you have the issue is, like, I have run into the other issue is when there are specialized class taught by very good professor, your class need to capture enough interest to get enough student for a class to happen. So you need an enrollment number. So, like, if you teach a very specialized, like, technique or very specialized, like, genre, you don't get enough enrollment number, your class won't happen. You won't get paid. So it's hard to be a professor. But, like, I totally understand the disconnect between, like, you know, school.
Yeah, I remember talking to somebody in Japan. He was talking about how, like, there was a particular school where 90% of the students were studying character modeling or character design and, like, game design, which makes no sense. Like, 90% of game developers are not character designers and game designers. Yeah. So, like, but, like, that's what people wanted to be. So they're yes. like, well, we're going to take your money. At the end of this program, you know, the likelihood of you getting your job is very low because now we're, like, mass manufacturing jobs that basically are some of the most competitive and actually not even, even on a large game team, like, these are not yeah. positions that are plentiful, you know?
Yeah.
Compared
you don't
to
need
like,
that many.
Yeah, you don't need that many. Yeah. So, like, there's the economics of the school.
But, like, everyone want to make monster. Like, when I was in school learning 3D modeling, I was like, I want to do environmental design because I don't really care about mythic. I don't really like fantasy and stuff. And my professor was so surprised. He's like, you don't want to make monsters? I'm like, why do I want to make monsters? Apparently, that's what everyone want to do, is they want to make monster and they want to. And that goes back to, like, game design. I noticed a lot of stuff is when you have, like, such a... We're in a weird era where we have a very large, diverse game player, but we have a lot of white men designer who want to make their own fantasy, and they're creating their own fantasy. They're creating, like, what they think is cool. You know, it's like ultimate fantasy for a lot of people is you get to make what you think is cool, and that's your job. But then you have to go back to, you know, what does the audience want? What's the player base? And, like, what the player want? Maybe player don't all want certain type of fantasy, but we keep producing certain type of fantasy because that's what the developer think is cool. And it's interesting. It's a really, we are in a, I'm really lucky. I feel I'm very honored to be a game developer these days because we are in a very interesting time where you have so many people coming from school who goes to indie or like goes into like this different market, but you have like an older force who like have to like either adapt or like keep creating certain fantasy for certain group. And then you have like the kids, they just want to play Roblox. And so it's like, you know, what game is gonna be like? It's interesting. Being Asian in game industry means it's very unlikely for me to be able to make a game that is my own fantasy unless it's like, you know, my personal project, which I am doing. The game I get hired to do is almost never my personal fantasy. So being an Asian designer and being an Asian female designer means I have to learn what other people are fantasized, what's other people's fantasy, and how to create those fun, how to create an experience that is like fun for like a diverse audience. Because I don't really have the luxury to make my own dragon game or whatever. And I think that's like a very unique perspective, being people of color in general in the game industry, at least in America right now. It's like you have to balance between your own identity and what quote unquote like
demanded of you as a job.
What's the cool, what is like the investors think is the fun game? What are people, it's not necessarily what a player likes to play, but more like, you know, what are people who pay you money think is a good game or stuff? You know, you read a lot of game development history and you see like people just be like, oh, this thing is really cool. I want to do it. I'm like testing it. But for us, it's more like, what are, like, I enjoy my job. To me, being a game designer is being a problem solver. To me, it is to create a shared experience that is like fun for a lot of different people. But it is a very different mindset and a very different development process compared to like people who create their own fantasy.
Well, we've been going for a while. So give us a closing thought.
You know, give people with marginalized identity more opportunities. And they may look different, they may talk different, but doesn't mean they don't know how to make a good game.
Well, I think that's an excellent point to part with. Thank you very much. That was a really interesting conversation. And I think we covered some interesting ground.
Thank you so much.
I really still don't know what's going on with this interview series, but I think we definitely...
You're doing a great job by giving people a voice, and sometimes that's all it needed.
Well, thank you. That's really kind of you. Well, on that note, have a good night. And I'll see you around.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music. And thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.